The State versus West.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning to the court. And Judge Dwyer, may I reserve 2 minutes? This is Mr. West's appeal of his conviction for trafficking in stolen property. We're asking the court to reverse that conviction because the issue at trial was whether Ty West knew that the jewelry he sold to a pawn shop was stolen. And the verdict, the outcome in this case, was the result of the live courtroom testimony of two detectives who repeatedly told the jury in live testimony, under oath, that they told Mr. West during his police interview that they did not believe what he was telling them. And, you know, these police officers, these detectives, could have said in the beginning of the interview, Mr. West said such and such, and then he said this, and then he told us he sold this jewelry to a pawn shop after being given it. It was given to him by his friend, Mr. Lang. But when the defendant ultimately says what happened, he was given the jewelry, the jury by that time has heard three or four assessments by authoritative police officers on the stand telling the jury that they told him, you know, we don't believe what you're saying here. And at that point, the case was over because of the prestige that police officers and their opinions about facts and credibility has on a lay jury.
So you cited Louis to us, which had
yes.
That section in an incredibly long opinion that actually matters for this, maybe. What's the rule that you take from Louis?
So I have to concede that Louis appears to be an acceptance by the Supreme Court of some repeated misreadings of their original 2001 Demery opinion, which the court has provided to us here. Demery in 2001, the four-judge plurality, stated that it is appropriate and possible or admissible for the court to admit a tape recording of a police interview in which detectives or police can be heard telling the defendant that they don't believe him. And that's because that tape recording for a lay jury is clearly a verbatim account of a past event. And hearing detectives during an interrogation say, we don't believe you, simply doesn't carry the prestige that is brought into the courtroom when police officers in all their regalia take the witness stand and turn to the jury and say, we told him, we didn't believe him. And Demery turned on that question of a tape recording. Now,
in terms of Louis, are you giving us now your explication of how Louis fits with Justice Sanders's version of the rule in Demery, or are you saying this is what makes Louis different from Demery, and so we ought not worry our little heads about it, or what?
What
are you asking us to do with Louis and Demery?
The Louis section, the quote from Louis is pretty brief, but it does seem to accept an interpretation of Demery, which I think is wrong, but has been issued by Division II in particular, in which the court seemed to have said, it's all right for these detectives live in court to say, we told him we didn't believe him when we were interviewing him. If, and this is the difficult part, if the detective's testimony is almost a near verbatim, blow for blow recounting of what was said in the interview. In other words, if it's truly extraordinarily close to a tape recording. But if the officers go beyond that in their live courtroom testimony and shift from this is what we told him, and then he said this, and then this is what we told him, if they go beyond that and say, offer anything that sounds like they're offering their opinion right now of the interviewee's credibility, then the rule against police opinions on credibility has been violated. And that happened here, too.
I'm asking the time we've got. So State versus Kirkman is a case that we generally think of in terms of what's a RAP 2.583 manifest error. But within the decision, it talked about a similar type of circumstance with a different type of witness. So they weren't talking about the police officer. They were talking about the other witnesses. I realize you didn't do the briefing, but if you're in a position to recall Kirkman and this issue and tell us how it fits and where you think it might fit, obviously we know there's Demery, we know there's Kirkman, we know there's Louis. We're going to try and figure out what else we got to try and put this jigsaw puzzle together. But I want to give you a shot. Does Kirkman matter? If so, how does it matter?
So I believe that Kirkman sort of falls into that other category of opinions on credibility cases where a witness is assessing, you know, whether they believe the defendant was impaired or whether they believed the evidence showed that the defendant was guilty because he did X and such. It was not about police officer opinions on credibility. So I don't really believe that those cases do apply to this unique situation, which is really dependent on the fact that we don't want police officers to invoke their authority on the stand and over-impress the jury with their statements of them not believing the defendant. Do you agree with that? Kirkman falls into that category?
Articulated a position with regard to it, so yeah.
So I don't think it's a different category of cases. I don't know it has to be synthesized.
The last case I want to ask, and this is unusual, I don't usually get up here and say, tell me about this case, but it's kind of where we are on this one. Notaro, Judge Quinn Britnall's Division II opinion from 2011 or whatever it was. I think you might have made reference to it earlier without naming it, but how does it fit in, or does it fit in to our analysis?
So the smart alecky first answer is it's a Division II case. This court's not bound by it. Second answer is it really does get Demery wrong, because Demery says that it's fine for the police officer to testify, we told him we didn't believe him, because that's just for the purpose of showing the context of the interrogation. That's not what Demery said. Demery said it's okay to admit a tape recording, and then when the court said these aren't even opinions on credibility, the court was saying was, because we're hearing them in a tape recording where the officer is not under oath and where every jury would understand this is the rough and tumble of a police interrogation that happened to be recorded. And the third way that Notaro can be distinguished is that case, I think, very much states that these sorts of opinions on credibility, if the jury is going to be allowed to hear them, the Notaro court was very careful to say this was a near verbatim, almost as close to a tape recording as you could get. This was essentially a verbatim accounting of each and every single question and answer that was asked. And that is also different from this case, where Detective Maples in particular launched into what was clearly his opinion, not a description of the interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Scott Halloran, Snohomish County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, representing Respondent State of Washington. Your Honors, I would just like to draw attention to what the trial judge here actually ruled regarding the motion in limine regarding this issue. She said that the detective may not offer an opinion at trial as to whether or not the defendant was lying or telling the truth, but the detective may testify as to what she said to the defendant to prompt him to then make additional statements. And she reiterated the fine line here is you may not go beyond that to ask whether the detective thought the defendant was lying, but you may ask what the detective actually said. When the detective said, I don't think you're telling the full truth, that was admissible because it prompted those additional statements.
And what's the CP site for that?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
The clerk's paper site for that. Where are we going to find that? Is it in the verbatim or is it in the clerk's paper?
It's at May 23rd, 2016, Report of Proceedings, page 11.
Okay, thanks.
And, Your Honor, the state sees this case as following not just the judge's ruling there, but the judge's ruling conforming with Demery, which was factually quite similar. In Demery, the court had...
You realize that in your briefing, you've got Demery wrong, right? You realize that. That's why we benefited everybody with copies out of the book. I understand that if you research off of a computer, a private business will give you like 17 headnotes out of Demery, the first 16 of which say per Owens, Jay, and three justices, and one of them, the last one, actually has anything to do with what happened there. If you research out of a book, the reporter of decisions has only one headnote, and that headnote is found in the concurrence from Judge Justice Alexander, who states his agreement with the four-justice dissent of Justice Sanders, but his belief that the error that they describe was harmless. Therefore, the judgment of the court was to affirm, but it was not on the rationale that you quote in your briefing, which comes out of an opinion signed by only four justices. So that's why I gave you that ahead of time. I didn't think it's fair to just surprise anybody with that. Not that anybody should be surprised, but it's quite apparent if you're an old person and you read books and you see that, it's quite apparent what happened. If you're on a computer, that's work done by people who can't get your job, and they put it out in a somewhat misleading spot. So Demery doesn't help you. What happened in Demery doesn't help you. So you heard me discuss with Mr. Davis a variety of other cases. Hopefully you're in a position to talk to us about those cases here today and tell us how they apply and if they help you.
Yes, Your Honor. I think Notaro is helpful for the real crux of the issue comes down to when the detective was testifying in court, the detective talked about what happened in the interrogation, and here the testimony about it was not testimony of the personal opinion of Detective Ludwig or Maples, but rather both detectives recounting what each of them and the defendant said during the interrogation, which produced the continuously changing and evolving version of events the defendant gave. Why was it changing? What was the reasonableness of that, and how could the jury interpret why these responses regarding specific, discrete, factual issues were changing? And that what came from the detectives recounting what they said. At no point in this entire transcript will you find a detective saying anything about his guilt, calling him a liar, questioning his veracity, other than prodding statements which gave additional responses.
So Notaro is supportive of the trial court's actual ruling here?
Yes, Your Honor.
How about Louie? How does the Louie case?
Your Honor, my reading of Louie also supports the same essential point, because Louie says that that an officer may repeat statements made during interrogation accusing a defendant of lying if such testimony provides the context for the interrogation. In other words, Louie is citing to O'Brien, to Dubria, to Kirkman for the proposition that the officer is not getting on the stand and saying, I think he's a liar. The officer is getting on the stand and saying, over the course of a lengthy interrogation with a lot of back and forth, when I said, challenged on this, the reply was that. And in that sense, Louie, I think, is along the same lines as Notaro.
Does it affect the analysis that Louie is a collateral attack and that there was no objection to the testimony at the time it was offered? I mean, I think it was argued in the context of ineffective assistance of counsel in the PRP.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I think the context is a little bit different if there wasn't an objection in that trial at the time. But for informative purposes on the general point, I think it is on point that there's a difference between exactly what the trial court here was trying to avoid. In other words, you can't get up there and say you think he's dishonest. You can't say he's a liar or comment on his credibility. But I don't think that's what recounting what each person said in the interrogation is doing. I think there's a... From the state's point of view, Mr. West is conflating those issues in terms of statements in interrogation versus saying, getting on the stand and saying you're not credible.
About Kirkman, does Kirkman fit into this mosaic? It's not the same in terms of the testimony that's being described or the interviews that are being described. But as you say, in Louis, they cite to Kirkman. And so I guess my question is, why would they do that? And what about Kirkman then would be applicable, if at all, to our inquiry here?
Your Honor, I believe that where Kirkman becomes applicable here is a general principle that if the officer, if one witness, a witness can't comment on another witness's credibility. However, when I think of Kirkman, what it's suggesting is a better approach is a somewhat sanitized version where you ask, is that consistent with what you observed? You know, and in other words, when witness B says, when witness B is given information of what witness A observed, was that consistent with what you observed? No. Well, that is, you know, you're challenging what witness A said, but you are not coming out and saying, I don't find him credible. And I think that in this context, that is what the officers here were doing. They were not getting on the stand and saying under oath, I don't find this defendant credible. I think he's lying. That's not what they said, but they were recounting specific discrete parts of evidence that just didn't comport with what he was telling them during the interrogation.
Let me give you two examples of testimony. You're being interrogated. I'm the police officer. You give me a story. I say, I don't believe you. Because we've got security video that shows that you weren't in Cleveland that day. And you say, well, how about this one? And we go from there. Under your view, that comes in, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. How about if it's just you give the story and I say, I don't believe you? We've got security cameras that show otherwise. And that's it. You say nothing after that. Does he get to testify to that?
That seems problematic to me because that...
Okay. Then in the time we've got, appellant's counsel urges that the distinction is, or should be, the difference between the jury hearing the recording, or I guess seeing the video of the prior communication, or in Notaro, the functional equivalent of that, because it was a complete recitation on the one hand, and what happened here being other than that on the other hand. What's your response to that?
My reading of what happened here was that what the detectives testified to was the same as, in other words, they weren't being asked anything different than what was on the recording. I'm not sure if that's...
What I take appellant's counsel to say, that, but it wasn't the whole recording. It wasn't as if they just were made percipient of the entire recording, as in the first instance, or the equivalent of that, as in Notaro. And I guess we'll never know what your thoughts are on that. All right. Thanks so much. Mr. Davis.
I'm wondering whether Your Honor was asking about Kirkman and its aspect that discussed RAP 2.583 and the manifest constitutional error question, and also relatedly the fact that it was a collateral attack, because Kirkman does talk about the rule that you cannot appeal improper opinions on credibility unless the opinion was a nearly explicit statement.
Yeah, that isn't what I was getting
at. Okay.
In the course of deciding whether or not the error, whether there was error, and if so, whether it was manifest, there were discussions about the testimony about prior things. And that's what I was getting at in particular, because it jumps out in Louis as, why do they think it's worth a citation? And then does that reason apply here? So that's...
I think that reasoning would be consistent with Demery in that Demery simply said that a tape recording is clearly a record of a past event and very different than police officers offering testimony under oath to the jury. If the case does come down to the question whether this case, the detectives in this case, exceeded the bounds of even the lowest denominator rule that a court might apply, I think it's clear that the detectives exceeded every possible bounds. You know, this case started with an opening statement in which the prosecutor said, right off the bat, Mr. West told them a story that doesn't match the facts. That's not the blow-by-blow of an interrogation. Detective Maples said, we told him it doesn't work that way, but then he said, without saying we told him, most heroin users aren't going to give up heroin to get jewelry. He was admitting pawning, but only saying he exchanged it for the jewelry. And then what he was saying just didn't make sense. So even under the lowest common denominator rule, these officers turned to the jury and gave their personal opinion. And that is extraordinarily prejudicial. We'd ask the court to reverse.
Thank you. Next up, detention of COVID.